Support for Sound Effect on KNKX comes from WSECU, who feels that during this unprecedented time, thanks is not a big enough word for what you're doing and what you're giving up. WSECU is in awe and is grateful. WSECU is a credit union that's served Washington since 1957. WSECU is with you all the way.
I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and you're listening to Sound Effect on KNKX.
Who's the man?
Hey, buddy!
Who's the man?
So picture a bald, heavily tattooed guy, salt and pepper beard down to his sternum. He's in the car wearing a bright blue face mask with the logo for Sound Health.
I got this.
Cell phone for me.
You? Yes.
This is Gino Yevgevich. He's visiting his clients, all adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Hi, Jan.
There you go.
Today on Sound Effect, more stories from our podcast, Transmission, covering the coronavirus epidemic in the Northwest. We're going to spend some more time now with Gino. He works for a nonprofit called Sound Health, which does behavioral health services in Western Washington.
Who's your best friend and who loves you most in the world?
Gino's driving around in his car doing what he calls his Melissa outreach.
Oh, Melissa outreach. She has a song, Come to My Window. That's why I started joking with that, you know, with that song at the beginning of it, but now I call it Melissa Outreach.
Gino's a crisis counselor with Sound Health. He meets with clients with developmental disabilities who are struggling and tries to get to the bottom of it, whether it's a mental health episode or family problems or whatever.
And all of these things cannot really be detected on the phone. That's why I'm still outside. And that is basically what makes my life so beautiful as it is right now.
Hey, man.
Hi.
How you been? Good to see you.
I'm wearing gloves. I was just collecting the stool sample to send it off.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah.
Sorry about interrupting you in collecting the stool sample.
It's over now.
But, this is how I'm doing the outreaches, because I still want to see you, you know. I still want you to know that I'm around. No matter what, I'll be around.
They're used to seeing me. I cannot just not see them anymore or call them on the phone.
A few things to know about Gino. This is not the career he started in. It's at least his third act. Gino is from Bosnia. And if you were from Bosnia in the 80s, you'd probably know him. He was a foppish pop star known as Gino Banana. Then war came. Sarajevo was under siege, and Gino and others spent months dodging bullets and bombs. Gino responded with an audacious act of art. He staged a production of the anti-war musical Hair in the middle of an actual war zone. By the end of that experience, Gino says he was changed. He was peeling, as he put it. Not like a banana, necessarily. More like a snake emerging from its old skin. The new Gino swore off commercial music and morphed into a hard-rocking, politically trenchant punk artist and frontman for the group Culture Shock. After relocating to the Pacific Northwest, Gino began a new chapter. He works with developmentally disabled adults teaching theater. He had such a knack for connecting with the clients that his supervisor, David O'Neill, asked him to join the crisis stabilization team.
Gino has this warmth that he just exudes, which is, I think, surprising to many because, you know, you don't expect that from somebody who has had any sort of level of fame.
David O'Neill says when Gino visits clients with his personality, his tattoos, his gusto, he brings some color to these grayed out days that we're all living in.
So if they know that Gino's going to drive by twice a week, you have something to look forward to. These days that sort of blend together, that every day is Blur's day. You know, it's, no, every day has it. Oh, this is the day Gino comes.
Come to my window. Outreach.
As Gino makes his rounds, delivering medication, checking in with caregivers, he says his clients have been bearing up remarkably well throughout the pandemic.
It's pretty much the same as us. I expected way worse. And this is how much we profile against people with developmental disabilities. You know, even me, that I know them for a long time, I expected much, 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 more chaos and much more, I want to go out. I don't care if there is a pandemic or not. Nope, that was not the case.
Gino says it's not all smooth sailing, even in normal times. And things that may have been a setback before are a full-blown crisis now.
One of my very young 19-year-old clients got kicked out by his parents outside because they're afraid that they're going to get the coronavirus. I mean, don't get me started. So now he's outside, scared.
The client did eventually find space in a shelter in Redmond. It's a safe place to sleep, but the rest of the day, this client had nowhere to go. Out of desperation, Gino says he called the governor's office.
They called me back within a couple of days, which is amazing. I never thought I did it, you know, as a desperate move. His deputy contacted me and DDA contacted me, and we all pretty much saved the kid. Kid is in AFH right now.
And AFH is an adult family home.
That's an example how we can all work together and that system actually works.
And sometimes there's not a plan for a client in crisis. Sometimes the solutions are incredibly complicated or just unworkable in the pandemic. And so Gino keeps up his Melissa outreach.
Gotta tuck in my beard, huh?
David O'Neill, my friend and director, he actually told me one truth that it doesn't matter what you do in that moment, but if you keep showing up every single day, telling them that you're on their side, and that you are unconditionally going to be there in their life no matter what, that is going to give you great results. Because it is a human characteristic, it's a human nature to believe if somebody is there all the time with you, regardless if that person is telling you stuff that you want to hear or not want to hear. It's assurance that you're not alone in the world.
For Gino, doing outreach during the pandemic has crystallized how important and fulfilling this work is for him. He says once more, as he did after the Bosnian War, he's emerging from his old skin as something new.
I feel like I'm peeling again. I think that this next crisis, this was the first crisis in my life, this next crisis actually made me peel again. I'm peeling again. I'm kind of sick and tired of myself, who I was.
I should have done this long time ago in my life. Selfishness. Bam.
You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today it's more stories from our podcast, Transmission. Many factors can put a Latino family at higher risk from COVID-19, but two stand out: economic pressure to continue working and navigating a complicated healthcare system without a strong grasp of English. This was the situation that Tomas and Antonia found themselves in when Tomas got sick with the virus. KNKX's Simone Alicea brings us their story.
By the time Tomas Lopez died of COVID-19 on April 2nd, social distancing had taken hold in Washington, but we did not yet know the disparate effects this disease was having on the state's Latino population. With the help of an interpreter, Mercedes Dantona, I spoke to Tomas's wife, Antonia Zamorano. Antonia tells me she met Tomas more than 20 years ago in Hidalgo, in central Mexico.
So I met him in my hometown. He was working, clearing brush from land, and he came to clear my grandfather's land, and that's how I met him, and we became boyfriend and girlfriend.
Nos hicimos novios.
They dated for a few months before Tomas came to the U.S. for the first time. He returned to Mexico about a year and a half later to marry Antonia. After the wedding, they came to the U.S. together. They settled in Pacific, Washington, just south of Auburn. Tomas went to work in construction.
After we came to the U.S., I had no kids. I had nothing to do at home. So I would cook food and I would bring it to him wherever he was working at.
She'd make salsa verde, mole, tamales, and of course, tacos.
Y sus compañeros de trabajo les gustó la comida mucho y me decían, ¿por qué no nos trae comida, señora?
Soon, his coworkers wanted some, so Antonia would cook for them. Then the neighbors, so she brought them food too. That's how Tacos El Tajín was born. The family now owns two trucks and a restaurant in Algona. Tomás gained a little bit of fame a few years ago when a propane tanker overturned on I-5. The backup lasted for hours, and people were getting hungry. So Tomás started slinging tacos, as captured by this video that was widely shared at the time.
This is how close I am to where they closed the freeway. And I can smell tacos.
This, Antonia says, is how Tomás was. She would cook while Tomás dealt with the customers.
And, you know, he loved to talk to people. He loved to share with people. He was very friendly. He was very sociable.
As the business grew, they had three kids. Along with Tomás's two other children from a previous relationship, Tacos El Tajín became a family affair.
He was always with us as a family. The kids, myself, were the most important thing for him.
What's remarkable about the way Antonia tells me the story of Tomás getting sick is she puts a date to nearly every event.
Well, the first thing that happened was that we got the flu on March 1st.
This was one day after public health officials announced the first death from COVID-19 in the United States, when we knew community spread was happening here. Antonia took Tomás to the hospital because she had heard about the coronavirus, and she wondered if that's what he had. But he wasn't tested then, and they went home.
So about a week and a half later, by March 8th, I took him to the hospital again because he couldn't breathe really well. And they said to him that his lungs were clean and that he was experiencing flu-like symptoms. So we went back home.
How did you feel after that second visit?
So I felt more confident because they kept saying, don't worry. But he even had bruising in his stomach because he was coughing so much.
We don't know why Tomás wasn't tested at this point, but this was early in the pandemic. Testing supplies were even more limited than they are now, and patients seeking a test had to check a lot of boxes when it came to their symptoms. It's also worth noting that their second visit was about a week before the state started issuing restrictions on restaurants and other businesses. So Antonia and Tomás kept working. She says nobody told them specifically to stop, and they had to keep going to support the family.
Yes. We kept working till March 22nd, and he stopped going to Seattle to sell because he wasn't feeling well, so I would go by myself.
That lasted for two more days until Antonia also started getting sick. She tried to get Tomás to go back to the hospital, but she says he didn't want to. He expected the doctors to tell them the same thing they had before.
Then on March 27th, I saw that he was getting worse and worse. And I said, Tommy, let's go to the hospital. And he said to me, go to the restaurant and bring me the computer because we had to file the sales report by the 28th for the month of February.
So wait, so one of the last things he did before going to the hospital was getting all your paperwork and payroll in order?
Yes. Before he left.
At this point, you take him to the hospital. What happens then?
So we went to the hospital. We got in and he went in. I was not allowed in after we explained how he was feeling. And that was the last time I saw him. I was able to give him a kiss on the cheek, and then they took him to a room, and I was not allowed in.
The week that Tomas was in isolation, Antonia says she was distraught. She says she felt like she never knew what the doctors were doing when he was being sedated or intubated. She says she was the one calling the hospital to check and see how he was. On March 31st, a nurse was able to connect Tomas and Antonia through FaceTime. Tomas couldn't talk, but Antonia was able to talk to him.
Ella también me hizo favor de ponerme el teléfono en su oído de él para que yo hablara con él. Y lo pude ver a mi esposo ahí sin poder cubrirse.
And I was able to see him for the first time. She put his phone to his ear so I could talk to him. And I was able to see that he was on that bed, that he couldn't move. The doctor said that he was doing well, that he was responding well, that his lungs were at 80%.
Then, on Thursday morning, April 2nd, Antonia says she got a call that Tomas was taking a turn for the worst. They connected again via FaceTime, and Antonia said goodbye.
Que ya ellos pensaban que ya no iba a resistir más.
So we were in that FaceTime call for about an hour. I was really praying to God. And around 10:30, I was told that he was almost gone and there was nothing they could do for him.
Tomas died at age 44. Antonia and her mother also tested positive for COVID-19. Her mother even spent some time in the hospital, but she recovered. Antonia says no one else in the family seems to have gotten sick. Life since Tomas's death has been difficult and uncertain. It was more than 2 weeks before Tomas's family was able to see his body and lay it to rest. The trucks and the restaurant were shuttered for weeks. They began selling food again for takeout earlier this month, but business is slow, and it sounds like Antonia is still not sure how to run it all without Tomas.
Estoy con mis hijos tomándome un tiempo aquí, tratando de ubicarme, tratando de asimilar.
While I am trying to find my way, you know, try to really accept what happened and to think about the future, I don't know. He was the engine, the motor for this home, for everything. And he should not have been gone. I just need him so much, you know. There is so much I would love to say to him.
Do you know what the business, what the future of the business will look like, even vaguely?
Well, my kids are really supporting me because at the restaurant, I was just cooking everything and driving the other taco truck. Tommy was in charge of getting the permits, paying the bills, going to the store. I don't know anything about that. I don't speak English, but my kids keep telling me that we can do it and that we're going to be able to get ahead and survive.
Do you believe them?
Yes.
That story from KNKX's Simone Alisea. This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're bringing you more stories from our podcast Transmission, documenting life during the coronavirus epidemic in the Pacific Northwest. Next up, we meet a young woman named Aminata Kamara. She's a senior at Garfield High School in Seattle, and just as this new world of lockdowns and face masks and economic disruption descended on us all, she says a friend of hers was feeling the stress. So Aminata reassured her.
It's going to be okay. She was like, no, it's not gonna be okay. I said, you just need to like accept or adapt to it. Like, oh, this is my new normal now. Let me just accept it.
Where does this 20-year-old person get the wisdom and composure to offer that kind of advice? Well, Aminata's originally from Sierra Leone, which struggled with a terrifying outbreak of Ebola for almost 2 years. So unlike most of us, Aminata can now face the coronavirus pandemic with the knowledge that she's already got one deadly epidemic under her belt. Here's KNKX's Ashley Gross with her story.
Aminata was 14 years old when the Ebola virus first arrived in Sierra Leone. That was in the summer of 2014. She was living with her dad and two younger sisters in the capital city, Freetown.
Sierra Leone has begun a 3-day nationwide lockdown as it confronts a worsening Ebola outbreak.
Ebola can kill up to 90% of those who catch it. Highly contagious, its symptoms include vomiting, diarrhea, and internal and external bleeding.
It was really scary, considering the way, like, the death keeps tolling up. It's wiping away generations. Like, if it starts from one mom and then a dad and then the kids, and then it just keeps going and going.
She says at first, people didn't think it was real. But before long, it was obvious. People were dying. And just like here, regular life shut down step by step.
At first, we were like going to school. Until I think like maybe a month or so, that when the death toll keeps increasing, I think that's when the president was like, we have to like stop going to school.
Businesses shut down. Troops patrolled the neighborhoods. Aminata's dad was strict.
He was like, you don't go out, you don't do this, you don't go to neighbors, we don't share cups, we don't, like, we're just at home. Yeah.
In a poor country like Sierra Leone, staying at home is not easy. Not everyone has running water or indoor bathrooms or electricity. Aminata says forget about unemployment benefits. Her father worked at a cement factory, and if he didn't go, they had no income.
The government don't provide any food or anything, so people have to go out. People have to like go and work and make money and provide food for their family. So it was hard because everything changed.
Her life as a student changed.
The education system goes down, and there was a time when the government started like this radio teaching program.
The Tempest by William Shakespeare. William Shakespeare spelled capital W-I-L-L-I-A-N.
But it wasn't strong because not everyone has this radio.
This text is compulsory for all literature in English students.
At that time when some kids should be listening to radio, more other kids are like trying to find something to eat.
Life became focused on survival. Aminata says her close family members avoided getting sick, but she knows lots of people who did get it. Some neighbors she was friends with contracted Ebola. It's hard for her to talk about.
Their mom started feeling sick and everyone, yeah. It just, like, within 24 hours, the whole family is sick. And then the quarantine them and then pick them up. But 1 week later, everyone's like, there is no one, like, from that family. Everyone who was staying at our house died from the virus.
She says one of the scariest times was when her father got sick. She thought maybe he had Ebola. He was vomiting and had a fever, and she didn't know what to do. If she told people, they would treat her family like pariahs.
They would quarantine the whole house, or maybe put you in some place with so much chlorine and other things. So it was like this fear within us.
But she was scared of more than just being quarantined. Getting Ebola is like a death sentence.
If the dad gets sick, everyone gets sick. If one person at a house gets sick, it's like everyone gets contaminated with that virus, yeah.
So imagine being a teenager. Your father is sick, isolating himself in a room. You're trying to make sure your little sisters have enough to eat.
We have to like start rationing food, and so I was just trying to like help them in my own little way while I was like, I need someone to help me too.
Finally, Aminata says her uncle came and took her dad to the hospital. They were relieved to find out it was not Ebola, it was malaria. She was inspired seeing the nurses and doctors bustling around at the hospital and started thinking she might want to become one of them someday. By late 2015, people in her country got some really great news.
Vigils and celebrations on the streets of Freetown as Sierra Leone marks the end of its Ebola outbreak that killed close to 4,000 people in the country.
With that Ebola nightmare behind her, Aminata moved to Seattle in December 2018. She came with her dad and one of her sisters to join her stepmom, who was living here. She settled in as a high school student. She started doing Running Start at Seattle Central College. But then...
Good evening, my fellow Washingtonians. I'd like to speak to you directly tonight about the COVID-19 pandemic.
Is it like this virus is like chasing me or what? I'm like, because when I was in Sierra Leone, there was Ebola. Now I'm here and there is coronavirus. So what's happening?
Humor helps her cope. She tries to get her dad to lighten up too. She sometimes likes to freak him out as a way to tease him.
I told him, I said, Dad, did you know that the coronavirus is transmitted now to like the shoes, like under the sole of your shoes? He was like, no. It was fun, but like, I can see that he's traumatized. Like, it's really
Wow, you're like messing with him.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not only thinking about myself, I have two girls that I have to think about. So it's hard. You don't know that until you have kids.
Aminata is grateful for things she has here that she did not have during the Ebola outbreak. She's got a phone and internet. She can do classes over Zoom. She has electricity and doesn't have to worry about food. But in some key ways, things are the same. Medical workers are putting their lives on the line to save people. And Aminata still wants to be one of them.
My friend was like saying that, Aminata, with this death, like, nurses are dying, doctors, maybe you should do something else, maybe go into accounting. I'm like, no, this makes me want to do it more now, no.
She plans to attend Seattle Central College in the fall. Aminata wants to go into nursing and eventually become a cardiologist. Like all of us, she's looking forward to the day when we've conquered the coronavirus. And maybe that moment will be commemorated with a song, just like people in Sierra Leone celebrated the end of Ebola.
Bye-bye, Ebola. We just want to say something to the people, then. No vex. Follow me, then. Yay! Ha! Nobody want to see you rising. And when you do, they don't even like it. Ebola come, let them realize it. Don't take many souls, go away. Lord have mercy.
That was KNKX's Ashley Gross talking with Garfield High School senior Aminata Kamara. You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today it's more stories from our podcast, Transmission. So, how exactly do we know how we're all going to feel as we navigate our way through this pandemic? Well, it turns out there is a mathematical model for that. Dr. Kyra Mouseth is a clinical psychologist and instructor at Seattle University, and she's been working on a model that incorporates data from past disasters. And she anticipates that 2 to 3 million Washingtonians are going to be adversely affected from a behavioral health perspective from this pandemic. But no two disasters are exactly the same, and we don't know yet how the COVID-19 pandemic and all the other stuff that's happening right now will play out. Here's KNKX's Kevin Kniestad with more.
Kyra Mouseth says the pandemic has things in common with other big crises, but it affects our behavioral health in some unique ways, too.
What we've found and been tracking kind of in Washington in the last month or so is that the anxiety has actually been a little bit less than we would typically see, and we're starting to see more significant indicators of depression that are coming out.
Mouseth says that the higher rate of depression is largely due to the social isolation and lack of connection that has come with this pandemic. Different results than you would see from, say, an earthquake. But based on patterns from the past, there are still some knowns, and what is typical in situations like this is for people to respond in phases. Mouseth referred to the beginning of May as just sort of getting past the honeymoon phase.
So what we can reasonably expect is that rates of depression are going to increase over the next three to six months. And we can, with a high degree of certainty, recognize that heading into the fall, it's going to be really important to prepare for higher rates of depression and really be looking out for one another. The risk of suicide goes up. That's related to economic concerns as well as things with the weather around here. You have the holidays approaching and whatnot. And sort of all of those things with the cycle of disaster response, where we'll be down in the disillusionment stage, is when people start to accept the fact that it's not going to go back to the way it was. There will be a new normal and it's going to be all right, but it's not going to be the same as it was. And that's a difficult sort of place of acceptance for people to go through. And for us in Washington State, that's going to coincide with right around October and November.
If that doesn't seem like a gloomy enough forecast, Mouseth says there are expectations of people, quote, acting out over the summer. This might include aggression, violence, substance abuse, illegal behavior, versus acting in, voluntary isolation and not being a participant. And her projections don't account for the recent mayhem that has come with some of these protests. So what do we make of all of this? How do we keep from becoming overwhelmed? Mouseth says, to start, realize that it's normal.
Those are very, very normal responses to a highly abnormal situation. So people are struggling right now. Yeah, everybody's struggling right now, and that's okay. And we can help each other. And resilience is more powerful than the struggle itself.
Resilience is a word Mouseth uses a lot when it comes to how to combat some of these ailments.
The majority of the time, human beings come through any scope of disaster with a experience of resilience. And it is something that can be learned. It's something that can be developed with practice and time. And speaking as a clinician, we really want to emphasize that, you know, all people have the opportunity to sort of focus in on how to develop their own resilience by emphasizing the three aspects that make it up, which are connection to other people and having a purpose, as well as being flexible and adaptive. And particularly with COVID-19, the necessity of being flexible and adaptive is really important to figuring out a way to maintain connection with other folks and really emphasize being, you know, creative and flexible in how we maintain connections and how we have motivations and what we are motivated by. It takes on a different meaning right now. So the emphasis on resilience is a really important thing. And that a lot of folks, most folks, in fact, are going to come out of this experience with, you know, different levels of resilience, but that is definitely something that we can emphasize in terms of sort of a call to action.
That was from KNKX's Kevin Kniestad, and Kevin's on the line with me right now. Jumping off from that last point, we were talking about, you know, being creative and ways to build resilience by connecting with other people as a way to take care of our mental health. And I was just wondering, for the most part, it's just been you and your cat in a one-bedroom apartment so far. How's it been working out for you, Kevin?
Yeah, it has just been me and the kitten. We've both been climbing the walls a little bit, her literally climbing the walls and me figuratively climbing the walls, but otherwise hanging in there.
And how have you tried to, like, stay connected to people and not feel, you know, completely isolated?
Well, I took some advice, actually. I was listening in on a teleconference with a psychiatrist who was saying that being socially distant doesn't mean you have to be antisocial. The psychiatrist went on to say that it's actually a great time to reach out to people that you haven't reached out to in a long time and reconnect. And so I took that to heart and I decided I was going to take that a step further. I was going to reach out to some people that I hadn't talked to in a while, but I was also going to record those conversations and make a podcast out of it.
Now, explain what you mean. This is a podcast about reconnecting with people that you've kind of lost touch with?
Yeah, so in almost every single case, it's someone that I haven't seen in at least a year. And, you know, I wasn't really sure how it was going to turn out. You know, I kind of had this anxiety about just hanging out with people in general, you know, that awkward, I haven't seen you in a while thing. And, you know, there's always ways to get out of it or avoid it. But, you know, it turns out that, you know, it's never really that bad. In case it's usually quite enjoyable. And it was the same situation here.
So how did you decide who you're going to talk to?
I started to think about, okay, so if this is going to be a podcast, then it can't just be, you know, just anybody. It has to be someone who can tell a story. It's not just for my own entertainment. It's for listeners' entertainment, too. And so I decided and landed on a guy that you and I both know who always has a story to tell, and that is our old intern from our show Sound Effect, Warren.
Yeah, Warren Langford, who's done a lot of really memorable stories for our show Sound Effect. And how did that go when you checked in with Warren? What was that like?
Warren's a really funny guy. So I learned a little bit about what things are like in Santa Fe, where he moved to.
Ravens are everywhere here. People need to associate Santa Fe with ravens more so than like the coyotes wearing bandanas.
You know, and he also talked a little bit about how people are really truly representing themselves on social media during this time.
I wonder if people are kind of changing their attitudes of how they're using Facebook and social media and Instagram. And it's not so much about bragging. It's just more about like living. Like, you're unable to see me, and I want to actually present an honest image of myself.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that he makes because, you know, we don't have much to go on in terms of understanding how our friends and loved ones are doing right now besides social media. So, you know, if the extent to which that represents real life makes a really big difference right now in a way that it doesn't when we're out seeing people face to face.
Yeah, I mean, literally, with the exception of the grocery store, really all of our interactions are, you know, electronic.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so that was Warren. That was your first one. Who else did you talk to?
Okay, the second one, I wanted to talk to a young woman who I went out on one single date with her. I haven't seen her in at least 7 years, and I thought if there was going to be one that was going to be awkward, it would be this one. But it wasn't awkward at all. We talked about our single date and how what we did would be actually a really great idea during times like these.
We went to the drive-in.
I was thinking about that because, well, for a couple reasons. Number one, because right now there's so many things that we can't go out and do that I feel like the drive-in is something that someone should get up and running again. It's like you can go to a movie, but you don't have to come in contact with anybody.
I legitimately was thinking the exact same thing. And the only drive-in I've ever been to was with you. And so that
ever in your entire life?
Yeah.
Well, we never did go on like a second date.
I don't think so. But I don't remember it not being fun.
It seems to me that there's a little bit of comfort in a time of isolation when you go back to something like that. You figure like a false start at a dating situation that kind of doesn't amount to anything. Like it adds up to nothing, right? Like, well, it didn't work out. But really, you still have a connection to that person. And I think that that's what you kind of reinforce when you check back in with them in a difficult time. I think that's kind of encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, Whitney, who else? Any other ex-girlfriends or did you go other routes?
No other ex-girlfriends, but there was another one was my friend Alex, who kind of taught me. I've moonlighted as a bartender over the years, and he kind of taught me how to bartend. And we have no good reason to not be hanging out on a regular basis. We got along so well. We were really, really good friends when I lived down in Tacoma. So he's kind of the what's our excuse friend that I wanted to catch up with. You know, there was this kind of mental block that driving from Tacoma to Seattle to see a friend is just too far, even though it's not that far. So my favorite part of the conversation with Alex was hearing that that isn't an issue for him anymore.
I'll drive 40 minutes to have dinner with a friend and then drive 40 minutes back like it's no thing. I mean, maybe we could just agree that this isn't going to be this conversation that we're having right now. It's not the substitute for us to actually make a 30 to 45 minute drive and let's have a meal. Let's break some bread. Let's reminisce. I'll plan my relapse around it. maybe I'll find a job that we can work together and I can stiff you on your tips. I'd be like, oh, maybe not. There's no tips tonight. Sorry, Kevin, it was slow. I need this $400. Jeez.
I'm glad to hear Alex's sense of humor is undaunted by pandemic.
I don't think anything could do away with his sense of humor. It was probably my favorite conversation. We probably talked for, I don't know, 45 minutes, and it ended up cutting down to 9 minutes in the final version because too many inside jokes. It's so, all in the edit. Yes.
It's all in the, we'll fix it in post. All right. So, so we've got an old coworker, an old dating prospect, and an old friend. Who else?
Well, another friend, but the first parent that I talked to, and her name is Ashton. She has a 9-year-old and an 18-month-old. And I have zero children, so the idea of having a child at all is terrifying to me. So I wanted to talk to her about her kids and what being a parent was like during this with the kids so far apart in age, which we did. But then she actually shared something that was really, really special that I did not see coming.
I can't tell you how hard 2007, 2008 especially was for me. I made a lot of mistakes, and I just want to thank you for always being there, no matter what, and for never passing judgment, and in fact, quite the opposite, telling me that I was being too hard on myself, because I don't think you realize what an impact that you have made on my life.
Wow, that's pretty powerful, Kevin. That was something you didn't know about?
No, I didn't see that coming. You know, it was, we were closer when we worked together back then, and, you know, I remember her having a rough time. I didn't realize that, you know, I was that much of a support for her, and it really meant a lot to hear that.
Man, that feels like it's, like, exactly what you were kind of after with this project in some ways, because, like, moving through the world, you know, we're not just our own experience. We're how we reflect off of other people. And you don't get to see that when you're stuck in your house. But by reaching out and making these connections, you can kind of get that feedback again to remind you that, you know, like, you matter to people.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't looking for compliments or pats on the back or for people to tell me, oh, it's okay that we haven't talked. Especially after doing the first couple, it was nice to hear that, you know, everybody else was kind of looking to talk to someone too. It's not just me. There is that some sort of satisfaction that, you know, no matter how long it's been, we're still good.
So what have been some of your favorite parts or most memorable parts from this project so far, Kevin?
There are two things that kind of stood out to me. One is that, again, I mentioned earlier that I kind of dread catching up with people in person that I haven't seen in a while. I just don't know if we're going to have anything to talk about or the conversation's going to be forced. And it was not the case in any of these situations. And everybody, you know, is looking for someone to talk to right now. Everybody is looking to catch up. Everybody is, you know, dying to, you know, to have it the way it was before, but we're all in the same boat. And then the other thing that I did that I got a lot out of was that the last question I asked everyone when I talked to them was who they would reach out to if that they hadn't seen in a year or talked to in a year. And for each one of them, I felt like they really put thought into that. And most of them said that they were actually going to go do it right when they got off the phone with me. You know, maybe there's another connection that I'm not aware of out there, or a reconnection that I'm not aware of out there that came out of a conversation I got to have with a person.
It's really interesting talking about how the conversations didn't feel forced, how they felt pretty natural. Because, I mean, I hope you don't mind me saying this. One thing I think that you and I have in common, Kevin, is that neither of us particularly love talking on the phone.
Correct.
It's not my, like, wheelhouse in terms of social life. And I always have a little bit of weird anxiety when I'm calling somebody that I haven't talked to in a little while. I don't know. I think all that stuff is probably constructed in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But during the pandemic, I've done some of what you're talking about too. I've reached out to friends that I haven't talked to in a long time, and I don't know why. And it's been positive every time. It's never been a big effort. Every time I'm like, why didn't I do that 2 months ago, 6 months ago, 2 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like it was good for your mental health?
I think it was good for my mental health, both short term and long term, because, you know, the positive part of it short term was that I got to catch up and learn what was going on in the lives of people that I cared about or haven't seen in a long time. And then the long term is I'm not so anxious about it anymore. Like I really truly believe that it'll be easier for me to reach out to people, whether we can see them in person or not. And you know, I don't quite have that same anxiety about, you know, catching up for coffee or answering a phone call from someone I haven't heard from in a while that I did 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good for you, man.
Yeah.
I hope I can kind of carry that lesson out of quarantine. We'll see.
Well, if you do need someone else to talk to, do reach out to our old intern, Warren, because I got at least 3 story ideas out of just conversation with him.
That guy's a machine. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Well, KNKX's Kevin Kniestad, thanks, man. Thanks for creating the podcast, Catching Up in Quarantine, and for sharing some of the highlights with us, man.
It was truly my pleasure.
And now time for another little moment of joy, this time with Tita Begashaw. She's a patient services specialist at Harborview Medical Center, and for years, she's led weekly classes there in laughter. It's a place for hospital staff and patients and others to get together and blow off a little steam and find a little joy in what's otherwise a really stressful place. The club is on hold for now. So I caught her on the phone.
I am doing great.
Tita is still a huge proponent of the therapeutic value of laughter. For her, it starts first thing every morning.
Before I go to work, early in the morning, when I take my shower, I laugh in the shower. I laugh nonstop. And then when I brush my teeth, I laugh, I smile in the mirror. And then dressed up, when I go outside and look at the sky, oh, if sometimes I see the full moon some days, wow, open my arm and laugh with the moon. When I'm driving, like 10 minutes, I laugh. And then I start my day.
If the idea of the curative power of laughter sounds to you a little bit, I don't know, naive, well, there are some things you ought to know about Tita. She emigrated here from Ethiopia in the late 80s during a brutal war there. She had family members killed and imprisoned. She has been through very, very tough times.
In my life, when I was back home, I was in a very difficult time. You know, really, wartime, like people dying on the street was scary. And I've been in trauma in my life. I know the situation is so sad, it's painful, but we have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to make someone feel good. Even when I do mask now, I smile. I know they're able to see my eyes when I smile them to make them feel good. Really, we have that God-given energy inside us. We all have.
Tita Begashaw works at Patient Services at Harborview. Her laughter club is on hiatus for obvious reasons. They are experimenting with moving it onto Zoom. It is a work in progress. Sound Effect is produced by Kevin Kniestad, Jennifer Wing, and Posey Gruner. We get help this week from Simone Alisea and Kari Plogue. Our executive producer is Florangela Davila. Lots of podcasts to subscribe to. You can find Kevin's podcast, Catching Up in Quarantine, our Transmission podcast, and the Sound Effect podcast in all the usual places you find your podcasts. Please rate and review them all. Be sure to tune in to Sound Effect again next week. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is KNKX.